What I rarely experienced is being miserable at a job, but trapped without escape from it. I have enjoyed the luxury to make changes and flee to something else. There are millions of people, however, who do not have this freedom. Some may lack enough education and training to enjoy much job flexibility and are often tethered to what feels like smothering responsibilities as parents and providers. I can feel compassion for such hardships, but I have not endured them myself. We all desire to live a great life, but most are realistic that such may not be in the cards for us. Still, we want to have the balance that Freud described, being able to love and work and so cope with life's woes. As someone intensely curious about the state of modern society and culture, this is my offering about how to make this vision more attainable for both of us. Whether it's the micromanaging supervisor, tone-deaf top management, imperious self-serving politicians, or the pressures from the community, so many of us are miserable at work. It's a sad case that many of us can rattle off exactly how much time we have left until we can retire. I will chronicle the career challenges of cops and teachers as illustrations of job stress in more detail in coming chapters. Who really knows how many Americans are miserable at work? What I propose in the coming narrative is an opportunity to stand back and look at one's life as an unfolding lifespan, climbing up out of the weeds that keep tripping us on our daily walk. Therapists know that unlocking a complex life situation requires stepping back out from the emotion to see the escape paths more clearly. In doing so, I will attempt to tie together some apparently disparate social phenomena that are roiling America and our ability to love our labor. That's from the opening of Miserable at Work by Dr. Will Miller, who has subtitled his book, Stop Blaming the Job and Fix What's Really Broken. Well, I have to agree, we've all experienced it sometime in our work lives, that feeling of helplessness or of anger, that wonder of whether we're in the right job, or worse, that our job makes us ask ourselves if we are at all valuable as human beings. Few are those among us who have had a work life that is free of these demanding moments, days, years. And so it is that Dr. Will Miller begins his book with a look at some real-life miserables he's met in his wide-ranging career. These folks who are anything but happy in their jobs range from a plumber to a schoolteacher, from a cop to a company president, from a nurse practitioner to, yes, a stand-up comedian. Life in all of its variety. The point Miller seeks to show us is what we already know, but are usually reluctant to accept. All of us are likely to be miserable at work. And so Will Miller takes us through several reasons we find ourselves miserable in these pages, asking us to visit along with him with troops of baboons, herds of zebras, and then to dash back in time to hang with the great Greek philosopher Socrates. We learn why it's probably okay and even useful to gaze at our navels. All of this leading up to a layman's definition of the term biopsychosocial approach. A big word that means we need to understand all of the factors that make us who we are if we are going to understand why it is we find ourselves so miserable at work so many times. As Miller goes on to describe that term, when someone comes for treatment with a problem, it's standard to rule in or out any organic factors, the bio, psychological considerations, the psycho, and then relationship matters, the social. It's a neat pathway to understanding what's going on and what can be done to fix it. Keep this in mind when thinking about your own symptoms. Are your physical symptoms driven by your anxiety? Are your worries about jobs and family life behind troubles with your insomnia? Are they driving your cranky irritability? Well, hello, of course they are. Is your chaotic fatigue, isolation, sad mood, and screwy appetite correlated with your depression? Yes. Remember the psychosomatic reference a chapter ago, stating the obvious: how you are thinking drives your organism physically. But after these psychosocial journeys, Dr. Will doesn't leave us hanging with the glimmers of understanding of why we're so often miserable. He asks us to look more closely at what is really affecting our work. What is causing our anxiety, our miserableness, if you will? Is it external and therefore beyond our control? Is it internal and therefore something we can change? If we want to make a change in our workplaces, that is. In other words, Miller helps us look at what we often interpret to be external reasons beyond our control. The manufacturing plant we work at is closing. The boss we have really is a jerk. And asking just what reasons we may be actually responsible for in our less than pacific work lives. How much do we make our work lives less than happy by acting, by thinking, by working against our own and others' personalities at work? It's a valuable self-help guide that this book is. And finally, Miller takes us in the last couple chapters of his book to visit with folks who have learned to surmount their miserableness. If you really want to fix your emotional interior, address what's absent in your life exterior. Fix the outside to change the inside. If you're alone and cut off, well, by gum, you'll adapt to that reality and try to soldier on. But know this, study after study affirms that isolation and loneliness don't just harm us, they lower our mood. In the blunt words of the 75-year Harvard Happiness Study, loneliness kills. Rethink your attribution calculation and do the assessment of your life outside work. When that's fixed and fulfilling, whatever is left on your misery plate can actually be attributed externally to your lousy job. But even then, you will have others you can come home to and share the complaints with support, compassion, and even laughter. Assuming you have been inundated with advice, both expert and non-professional, from Dr. Phil and from your grandmother, what elevates us above the noise to grasp an approach to living that will, if not raise us up to real joy? What will magnify and sustain high spirits? Let's finally turn to some ideas about life sublime. And so, this being a book by Dr. Will Miller, he closes with a call for us to make peace with and learn to develop our spiritual side as well. But before you throw down the book or this review as just another stalking horse for some religious proselytizing, or before you glom onto this review and this book as some religious panacea for achieving a happier work life, hear me and Dr. Miller out. In fact, hear Dr. Will Miller out as he continues on to say, let's consider our spirit and our spiritual life. Be advised that in our expanded diagnostic system, terms such as spirit and spirituality are variables that elude clear definition and measurement. It is opaque, misunderstood, often repressed, evokes suspicion, and is often misused, but its expression is real and critical. In professional counseling circles, there is always some resistance to drifting into this murky area. A big reason is that it simply resists being clearly defined. My personal sense of spirituality is as distinctive as my DNA. Its variation is evident in how we each describe its meaning and application in our lives. Consequently, counseling professionals generally have their own unique take on the significance, even the very reality, of this impenetrable matter of spirituality. So what? On this point, you should know that there is a divide among all the shrink hotshots about the validity and utility of spirituality and its cumbersome love affair with structured religious thought. That long-term study on happiness at Harvard referenced earlier correlated happiness about the world and our existence. Where do you look for experiences of awe? The incredible image of your son at his birth? Your newborn granddaughter with some of your face echoed in hers? Is it nature? Where do you look for joy and transcendent meaning? For in the end, as we'll hear shortly in Dr. Miller's own words, Miller encourages us to find solace by accepting the work we have set ourselves to do. Perhaps we can change the work environment. Perhaps we cannot. What we can do, Miller argues, is to change our mental outlook about our lives. It's that biopsychosocial thing, remember? By shifting our attention to what we can control, even if that is focusing our attention on the life we lead outside of our work time, focusing on what we can control and what we can do to pursue that which is our passion in life will make our work lives at least bearable, which is a whole lot better than miserable. Miserable at Work does not run to a large number of pages. You won't need to spend a week working your way through jargon and think pieces. But though this book is brief, even breezy at times, it is a look at contemporary work life, and it rewards the careful reader. Perhaps you know or know of Dr. Will Miller. He's a comedian, a counselor, whose snappy takes on our lives have graced comedy clubs and radio airwaves for years. Indeed, the book is blurbed by no less than Bob and Tom of radio fame. Miller's previous book, Refrigerator Rights, co-written with Dr. Glenn Sparks, made a splash with its humorous yet serious look at how our very human need for connection with others can be summarized with a phrase that asks us if we have the right to take what we want from a refrigerator near us. Spoiler alert, if we do have that right, we are tight with the person who lives with that cold appliance. I want to finish by reading from the final pages of Dr. Will's book, summing up the current lives of those miserables that we all meet up with earlier in the book, as Miller concludes. In some desperation, each of our miserable workers capitulated and abandoned hope that their job jam was going to turn around. They didn't quit, but emotionally threw in the towel. They couldn't change the stuff, so they chose, in some resignation, to take charge themselves. When they turned their focus to other strategies for coping, they essentially shifted their central life interest from their job and career to their non-work life. And it was here that they found control, possibilities, and joy. Each figured out a way to replace their draining job stress with activities that brought them the gratification that comes with personal empowerment. Their choices, made with surrender, displaced their brooding about work with gratification in new activities. Since they couldn't fix everything, they decided to fix what they could fix. And you? It's a great place to leave us with a question mark, isn't it? And you and me? Miserable at Work, Stop Blaming the Job and Fix What's Really Broken by Dr. Will Miller. It's quite an interesting, thoughtful, insightful read. And it's available at all of our fine local libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library.